This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 641, brought to you by Harry's. Get your trial shave set. Go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 641. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
I'm melting.
I think everybody wants to know. I want to know. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling much better. I assume people inferred that last week when I wasn't coughing the entire episode. But
you also said you still felt crappy.
That's true. I did still feel crappy, but I didn't. Anyway, the point is I feel better. We don't need to get into my whole medical history right now. I'm sure that's boring.
Well, you know what? Maybe this is the place. That's right, Connor. It's a very special episode this week. I've got your records here, and we're going to discuss some choices you've made.
My neighbor made a joke about me having tuberculosis, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I had been coughing for 3 weeks, and I sort of forgot that.
That's not the one with the guitar, though.
Yeah. So it's payback for the guy who learned to play guitar.
Did he learn? Did he quit playing?
He's on harmonica now.
Oh, God. Is that worse?
He's better at harmonica than he is his guitar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I could do this all day, everyone. I'm sorry. We are iFanboy and every week we read a stack.
I like him, just to be clear. It's just, it was
okay.
It was the same, like, couple notes over and over for, like, months.
Sure. No, I mean, you know, a good person and a bad guitar player can exist in the same plane. It's not, you know.
Sure.
Or a shitty person and a good guitar player. You may be surprised to learn.
It's common.
Every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick. If we have time to try to read some listener mail, maybe even a voicemail. That's a tease right there. It'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There will be spoilers. Exercise some caution. Everyone who's listening right now, there's an elderly bulldog staring at me and he wants me to move. I'm trying to keep him quiet, but I can't promise that's going to happen. So if it sounds like an upset pig, that's what's going on.
He wants you to move where?
He likes this part of where I'm sitting, so he wants to sit here. And because he's a bulldog, he doesn't know how to change his mind about anything.
You know what's interesting is that before we started recording, we were like, wow, there's a lot of books to talk about. We got to be careful about time. And here we are, wasting a lot of it.
Quality content.
So this week's pick, I would say 10 or 15% was influenced by the fact that the book came out on July 4th, which is Independence Day in America, and I watched Captain America the First Avenger and Captain America the Winter Soldier back to back on that day, feeling the good Cap vibes. Captain America number one, the new series from Ta-Nehisi Coates and Lanil Francis Yu came out, and I really liked it, obviously, because it was the pick of the week. You know me, I'm a sucker for Captain America. We enjoy Captain America books when they're done well, and this was interesting for a lot of reasons. Personally, the most interesting was that we tried Ta-Nehisi Coates' original Black Panther series. We didn't really enjoy it. we have been enjoying his new Space Black Panther series. And I wanted to see how he's doing, because I thought he hadn't really grasped comic writing with the first Black Panther series. Since I enjoyed his Black Panther, I was really excited to read this, and I thought it was really good. And I know there's been some controversy about people's reaction to him being hired to write, but, you know, this is a pretty much straightforward Captain America story, which I thought felt very much in line with what stuff like Roger Stern would write in the 80s. It had that vibe for me.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
I think I was surprised to see that it was Pick of the Week, not because it wasn't good, partially because I think it's really interesting. I mean, like, it's intriguing, I think, more than I enjoy it at this point, because I want to know what the author is going to write. I really am interested to see the direction that he's going to take with it. I'm seeing that he's you know, they're sticking with dealing with the...
Yeah, that's the only downside.
Their aftermath of, is it Secret Empire? Is that what it was called?
Sure.
When all events are named with the same three words put in differing order, it can be difficult. Well, the Secret Invasion, but that's not the same as Secret Empire, but the Secret Wars, and it's like, it's, it can get confusing after a while. You know, but basically it's interesting that this is really dead stuck in continuity, which is not surprising. Coates is not a person who doesn't know comics. Yeah. You know, he's not like a person who was brought in, like, he read comics forever. You know, he's on top of this stuff. And we talked about this with his relaunch of Black Panther. You know, he's definitely learned not to overstack a page, basically.
Yeah, he's gotten better.
Yeah, there was definitely a minimalism to it. I used to like use art a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got away from it. I remember when he first showed up, he was kind of a big deal and interesting. There was something about it that I don't know, I didn't gravitate towards. But I thought this was a really good example of Yu's work. It's the best I've seen from him in a while.
Yeah, I thought it was really looked really good. I mean, we made the same joke with Ed McGuinness and Avengers. He's probably going to draw 2.5 to 3 issues, but it doesn't matter. For this particular issue, it was good. The only art choice I would question was, so the issue opens with Nuke and a bunch of similarly dressed Nuke characters shooting up protesters in the National Mall in Washington, and you know, Cap's shield starts knocking guys out, and there's a big reveal of him jumping towards the camera, and he's got no eyeballs. And I just thought it was a strange choice to make in the hero shot reestablishing Captain America. Just not having pupils inherently makes someone look creepier. And I thought it was a strange choice.
I'm now flipping through the rest of the book to see if at any point he has pupils. Now, Bucky definitely doesn't.
He's
Nuke
wearing a mask.
Does.
Yeah.
There is not a single shot of his eyes.
It's weird.
Oh, wait, there, right at the end, page 24, we finally see his blue eyes. But the rest of them, he's going out of his way to not draw the eyes.
Strange.
Which is really interesting.
Classic Cap costume back, floppy boots,
yeah.
Big gauntlet gloves.
Male.
The only difference would be the lines on the mask, which I don't necessarily mind here. And I like the way that, because Bucky's also there helping in the sniper's nest, and it sort of recalled Brubaker's characterization of them from the war, where Cap was out there on the front lines punching dudes, and Bucky was in the back doing the dirty wet work.
Yeah.
And so, but here Bucky is picking guys off with a sniper rifle, which is much more brutal than what Cap is doing. I like
and
that.
And also, you know, that says this is a Captain America who's working with the guy who's going to shoot people.
Yeah.
Which is notable in sort of a strategy to take. I still haven't read Between the World and Me. It's one of those things that I want to read, but I've listened to a lot of interviews and read a lot of Coates' writing. And sort of knowing where he's coming from and his take on things, I'm just really intrigued about what he's going to do here. And one thing that I thought that was really good is that clearly there are allegories to the current political administration, but it isn't literal.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. I don't want, just like I didn't want Obama to show up, like I don't want the book to be about Captain America and Trump's world. Now, there are allusions to it, and it's definitely saying something like, wow, everything we thought had changed because Hydra took over to whatever. Great. That's a fantastic allegory. Go with it. And I liked that as a choice. It has the danger to be too on the nose, but I don't worry about that.
Yeah, I didn't get too on the nose here at all. The things that we deal with, for instance, some of Cap's former enemies being considered heroes because they fought against Hydra, like Baron von Strucker is now being praised for helping the fight against Hydra. That's an interesting level to it. That sort of recalls post World War II when the enemy of my enemy was my friend.
Sure.
And so what does that leave Cap when the guys he used to punch are now considered American heroes? And people still look at him with a side eye because he was the one. Again, we didn't like that story. We thought it would be best if they just moved on. They haven't. They're embracing it fully. So I guess we just have to go with it.
And also, you like, I gotta say, I get it from a cultural zeitgeist point of view that that's the story we're telling right now. Mm-hmm. It really does make sense to me. We're sort of just everything that you thought isn't necessarily the way it is, and that's we're going to hang out there for a while, which is maybe not what I'm looking for in my escape to superhero comics, but it's a valid choice.
Yep. And I like the setup. So, you know, after they defeat Nuke and his dudes, General Ross shows up and says he's starting a presidential task force, and he recruits Agent 13, who's still old from the Rick Remender storyline, and he recruits Bucky Barnes and not Cap, though. They need a different, more covert approach. And then there's a villain who is an X-Men villain I don't know much about, and doing things and off on the side, who obviously...
Yeah, I didn't know who that was.
I don't know anything about her either. I just read that she's an X-Men villain. She sucks away men's souls.
Not going to say anything.
or their body. She's like, looks like female Parasite, basically.
I like...
And she's Russian. Also modern consideration.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like Steve Rogers' massive weight set. I'm always a big fan of that. I don't know how I feel about the Sharon Rogers, not Sharon Rogers,
she wishes.
Sharon Carter.
Yeah.
Still being old. Like, I like the drama of it or anything, but it's one of those things like, you know, that happened in that one story a long time ago. And
it could have very easily been fixed.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. It was, you know, they were dealing with the walking cosmic cube. We could have just reset a bunch of things. And
I mean, in my heart of hearts, would I have preferred they just reset everything to zero, mm-hmm. and you know, in the way comics can do, and just start over, and like Sharon's young, and Cap is not considered a villain. Sure, but they're not, and they're dealing with it in an interesting way so far, and I thought this was really fun to read.
I mean, again, from a dramatic standpoint, having her be the old one now, and he isn't,
right,
is interesting, and they're going to dinner, and you know, like, the other Captain America was not good to her. And that's a lot of dramatic tension. It's not, mm-hmm. again, not necessarily what I want on a Captain America, but those are the right kind of choices to make if you're going to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be really interesting and fun. And as a fan of those old, you know, I'm an old-time Cap fan. This really recalls a lot of those great stories. It's not Cap versus the government, but Cap representing an ideal that is bigger than the government.
Yeah.
It has that Winter Soldier-y sort of 70s espionage feel to it, as opposed to a big superhero book, so far, at least with this issue. So I'm looking forward to more from Ta-Nehisi Coates, Lanil Francis Yu, and team on Captain America. Good start. Really good start for the book. Now, this was a week where I had a good amount of books, not an overwhelming amount, not a tiny amount, but I thought it was a really strong week, at least for things to talk about.
Yes. I'm shocked that San Diego wasn't this week based on...
I know.
It feels like they figured out, hey, what if we release all of our big books the week before San Diego, it gets completely buried. And they were like, all right, let's all do it the 2 weeks before.
So the book that everyone was talking about, Batman 50, Tom King, Michael Janin, we're never going to find that out. If I see Tom King at Comic-Con, I'll ask him. So this was the big wedding issue that we've been building towards for a while now. Who knows how long it's been we've been building towards. Do you ever, like, step away from, not the world, but, like, sort of take a step back and try to look at the world further back and wonder if you're the crazy one or if everyone else is the crazy one?
Connor, that's kind of my thing.
So, you know, we gave a spoiler. Did you give a spoiler warning? I don't even remember because there was so much going on in the opening.
Yes, I did. I'm curious. Did you have this spoiled for you?
No. So this was spoiled by the New York Times. I don't get the Sunday paper. I just get the weekday paper. I don't really go on social media. And once I heard this was out there, I just didn't go on any websites. Now, here's the thing. Didn't need it spoiled. I've been saying since the beginning they weren't going to get married.
I finished it. I saw that everybody got spoiled. I didn't have it spoiled. And I'm not entirely sure what the spoiler was. It was that they didn't get married?
Yes.
See, I guess that you had just, you know, I thought, well, no, that can't happen either.
So first of all, once you heard there was a spoiler, that means the only thing that could be was they weren't getting married because it's
It could be that they did get, I don't know.
Well, it's not a spoiler in the wedding issue if they got married.
It's a good point.
But the thing was, like, of course they were never going to get married. This is how these things work. These are the comics. They're soap operas. So Catwoman ends up jilting him at the altar, the altar being the rooftop. You know, that's the way it goes. Now, I liked this issue, but I didn't love it as much as I really liked seeing all the pinups from the long list of great artists, including a really terrific Lee Weeks one.
Yeah, I thought that same thing.
I thought this was a little too long. And I thought the extended metaphor about their eyes was way too extended. I like the issue overall, but I just thought it was... after a while, I was like, okay, I get it.
It was a little self-indulgent.
Yeah.
And not even self-indulgent, like team indulgent?
Indulgent.
Yeah, it was indulgent, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that Lee Weeks one is great.
It's really good.
It's stunning. That guy should be a bigger name than he is, just period. If he hadn't had that tag on the end to sort of indicate that Bane had sort of masterminded this in some way,
mm-hmm.
I think I would feel more ripped off.
So I guess he convinced Holly to convince Selina that she was going to ruin him? Is that what happened?
I guess it was super subtle, which I appreciate, sort of.
The point is, though, yes, he can't get married. I've been saying this forever. It's not like a big surprise. Like, yes, the realization she has that if I marry him and he becomes happy that Batman is toast, then yes, obviously, that's the case. That's why he was never going to get married. In the same manner that we knew, because there was an outcry about spoilers, we knew the answer that to the whether or not they'd get married. The fact that there was a Catwoman series, which we're going to talk about next, is also an indication they weren't going to get married. Because if they did get married, she would just be a character in the Batman series.
Oh, I don't know that I agree with that. I didn't have any of that kind of thought. But
I totally had that thought when I saw there was a Catwoman book. Because otherwise, she wouldn't be off on having her own adventures.
I don't know. I mean, there's lots of ways to go. I mean, regardless, though, I think you're right. He can't be married. I mean, he can, but it wouldn't be permanent, even if they did. And two, like, I don't know, at the end of this, it's a little like, well, what was the point of all that? And then I go, well, I really enjoyed reading all that. So that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, like, I don't so much like the end of it because they basically just had to tie it off like a wound,
mm-hmm.
you know, but if the journey is the important part,
yeah,
all the issues that led up to this were really fun and interesting.
Yes.
And a diversion from stuff. And he had to finish it. And you know, I don't know that there's a better way to do it. It was kind of, you know, it was a little unsatisfying as an ending. But
I mean, I guess it's not an ending from what Tom's saying. It's only the halfway point.
Okay.
But I will disagree with you and say the fact that this was all a Bane engineered plot made me like it less than just if it's basically been a relationship book for the last however many issues. It's been about their relationship. She should have come to that realization on her own as someone who loved him, not be orchestrated by Bane to figure out that she's basically ruining him as a hero by marrying mm-hmm. him. The other question would be, why does Bane care?
Because he wants to break Batman. I mean...
Also, why is the Joker being subservient to Bane?
Was Gotham Girl ended up as a bad guy? Is that
I guess.
Thing? And who's the Batman?
That's Thomas Wayne from Flashpoint.
He's in this universe?
I guess.
No. I reject that.
Nope. Wrong.
I reject that. I reject several parts of that that panel.
I enjoyed this. I especially enjoyed sequences of it, but on the whole, I was like, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. How many more pages? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, there were great scenes, but on the whole, and then I obviously wasn't surprised by what happened because I've been saying it's going to be forever, and honestly, I don't know how anyone who has been reading comics for any amount of real time was surprised by what happened or is threatening to boycott the book as I've seen or
really? I don't know. I don't read any of that stuff.
Or upset or, you know, like this was never going to happen. Never, ever, ever.
I mean, at this point, like, you know, fan reaction is, you know, who cares?
It's become
like anything you see is going to be, it's pointless. But yeah, I think it kind of, it is what it was. I didn't love it as an ending, but the you know as a whole, it was interesting enough.
I liked it. I just thought it was too much.
Yeah. This was a little undercut by that wedding issue, whatever 2 weeks ago that we had to read.
Kitty and Colossus.
I was like, it's the same thing. No, that's not either of those creators' faults, but it was you know again zeitgeist. There's like a disappointment zeitgeist going through everything.
It's much more likely that the characters won't get married than they will because these are ageless, serialized characters. Otherwise, they're like soap opera characters who get married and divorced every couple of times, and Erica Kane has 15 last names. You don't want that for
That'd
Batman.
That'd be great.
Nobody wants that for Batman. Catwoman number one, Joelle Jones, who did some of the best stuff on the Batman lead-up to the wedding with colors by Laura Allred. Great team here.
Yeah.
And so Catwoman bails on Gotham and is in... They never tell say where she is exactly.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Yes, they do. It's some city I've never heard of. I think it's made up.
Okay.
VH.
See, VH was all I saw, and I was like, what am I missing? No, is it Van Halen City?
Yeah, Van Halen City would be awesome.
It is now.
It's in the news story at the beginning. It's Villa Hermosa.
Van Halen City, got it.
Van Halen City is much better. We're going to go with that. So she's there. She's gambling. She's not sleeping. Meanwhile, there are other people in Catwoman outfits that are sullying her, quote, good name by killing cops and going on scores. And I liked looking at this more than reading it.
That's a true statement. She can draw.
Yeah.
I found this, whatever this other villain lady, I guess if she's a villain, I found that whole sequence really interesting.
Yes.
Sort of the TV interview.
The wife of the mayor, who's really the power, and right. who has a very intensive cosmetic routine.
Yes. I found that interesting. I like the new sort of world building.
Like, yeah, take no, that was good. I liked this. Like, this was a solid first issue. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
Yeah, I'll go with that. That's kind of where I am. Yeah.
Catwoman has a long history of being a protagonist. She had books forever, so that's not a big surprise. So here she gets a new costume. She, after however many years, has put away the Darwin Cook outfit, has a new one with her armpits exposed.
Mm-hmm.
For ventilation.
I mean, it makes sense.
It's not a bad outfit. I like it.
I didn't even notice that it was a different outfit. I just noticed the general, unless it's a handful, I just noticed the general, like, okay, that's Catwoman.
Well, she's still wearing, you know, head-to-toe black leather, but she has no more goggles, and mm-hmm. she's got these cutout vents in her armpits and gloves instead of a full body suit. So it's right. slightly different. And no, does she have a giant ring zipper? Yeah, she does. So only really the gloves and the vents are different. Anyway, so she is now confronted with a virtual cornucopia of copycat Catwomen.
I don't believe it is virtual.
Well, they're not real.
Well, they're actually there.
It's a drawing on the...
Okay, fair enough.
On the iPad.
Well, if we're going to apply that to everything...
It's a cornucopia of Catwomen.
It wasn't some weird dude who drew and fetishized that up. It was the ladies.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading more.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it's a two-thirds female creative team.
It will be pretty interesting to see if this is a writing and drawing pace that Joelle Jones can keep up with.
Sure. I'm looking forward to more. I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't love it, but I liked it, and I'm looking forward to more. I want to see what she has going on here. It's interesting.
Hombre de la Steel, numero 6?
You tell me, smart guy.
I don't know. It's a very non-Spanish.
Spanish. This is my favorite issue of The Man of Steel.
I'm definitely sure Estiel is not Spanish for steel.
Estiel. This is my favorite issue. This was something I thought about for a minute for pick of the week.
Uh-huh.
So this is drawn by Jason Fabok.
I agree this was the best issue story-wise of the rest of them.
Yes.
Largely because there was some reveal that was going on. A couple of really interesting things I think that happened. I think there was a couple of pages where Superman just started talking to Rogel Zergel, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, what? And then he just starts chatting at him. And I was like, that's awesome. Why are you talking to me? No, but what is that?
So we have a couple of things happen here. One, he, with the help of Supergirl, and then like a late coming Hal Jordan, who doesn't do anything, defeats the dude, Robert Shromo, ugly face guy.
It's the father of that dude from the cat, that lady from the cat.
Yeah, they throw him to the Phantom Zone with and then
noselessness is the other thing that's in the zeitgeist now on villains.
Meanwhile, in the flashback, we learn that Jor-El is taking, or evil Jor-El, who the fuck this Jor-El is? He can go off with Thomas Wayne and go screw.
Apparently, it's Jor-El. We've just decided to accept that. Because if they weren't 100% sure that it was Jor-El, this story doesn't happen.
You think this would be much more emotionally crippling for Clark.
Well, he's on the floor with a teddy bear.
He takes Jonathan and Lois on an interstellar adventure. So that's why they're gone
mm-hmm.
in the present. Was it that Jonathan's too... What was it? I don't remember. I forgot the reasoning why he takes him.
Because he can't be all he can be on Earth because
right.
he's too much.
Right. And Lois wants to go on to monitor.
Yeah, and write a book.
And so Superman gives her, I guess, his old suit, the old trunkless outfit to wear. He only has the one, I guess.
Oh, that's the, I get it. That's the explanation for why he's not dressed like that anymore?
Yes.
You see, he can't, they can't help themselves.
And so,
it
can't just be he changed outfits. He gave his suit to Lois to wear, and it'll protect her.
It's made of the same stuff that Marty McFly's Back to the Future 2 suit is made of. It just doesn't say drying mode on, but it works like that.
And so they go off, allowing him to flirt with a firefighter, and so the day has been saved. But Clark is sad.
Well, no, apparently Superman is an arsonist.
Well, that's the big last page cliffhanger leading into Superman 1, Action Comics 1001, is that a little kid comes in to tell the hot firefighter that Superman's the one been setting the fires.
Dude, I got to that last page and I was like, I really want to read the next one right now.
It's been good.
Yeah, I know.
Good. And this issue was the best one, and I'm looking forward to this run. I think it's going to be fun.
Yep.
You know, Fabok is Fabok. He's fine.
He's not bad. I don't really like it.
It's not a style I love.
Right. But it's good for what this, you know. This is what, you know, this is your David Finch, your whatever that school is. One of the Kuberts does it.
Right.
You know, this style.
Everybody's beefy.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't going to read Death of the Inhumans, number one.
And yet?
But why did I read it? I don't remember why.
Donny Cates?
I know why. No, I was like, yeah, maybe they'll actually kill him. I bought into it.
Which, all of them or just the...
I don't know.
Ugh.
The Inhumans have been such an albatross over from Marvel for the last couple of years that I thought, well, you know, let's see what happens. And then I saw Donny Cates' writer. I was like, okay. They killed a couple of them in this issue.
I just remembered what happened.
Well, what's his name got blown up? Triton?
Triton got blown up. Maximus and Lockjaw were apparently killed and destroyed.
And Medusa got impaled, but she's not dead.
Did she get impaled?
Yeah, and the explosion.
Oh, right.
Shrapnel
yeah.
went through her gut. So basically, the Kree who created the Inhumans way back when have come to conscript them into war. Finally, much like Robert the Bruce's betrayal of William Wallace, they set up a parlay with all the tribes and. Instead of parlay happening, this dude, this like super Kree guy who is dressed so similarly to like a rugged Black Bolt, kills everyone there.
Unite the clans!
So instead of uniting the clans, they were killed by the British.
Unite the clans!
And it was fun.
Here's what I know. Unlike many of the Inhumans things that I have read over this, this felt like the Inhumans.
Yeah.
Part of that is that it wasn't happening in the middle of the rest of the Marvel Universe. I find that when that happens for more than a little while, it tends to get tedious, and it's been tedious for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
The voices were pretty much spot on. I really liked the place that Mad Maximus took here in that he's, you know, he's not just the bad guy because it's his family too, so he was defending them to a certain extent. I loved – there's a bit where basically – Black Bolt takes over as the engine of the ship.
That was awesome.
Which I was like, that's brilliant. It's like, that's comic book brilliance. I'm not very happy about the Lockjaw.
Is he dead?
I mean, it seems to
have. Looks like it.
I mean, earlier Vox did that thing to him where he shot off part of Max's arm.
Right.
And so he got the rest of them with it, like where he disappears them. But maybe that reforms in some sort of Phantom Zone. Or something like that. I don't love the villain. I get the design, but it's sort of a horror-based design. It's very similar to the spiky eye thing.
Yes, you're right. It's very close.
You may remember it's on the list.
Yeah.
He has dumb little wings. It's Capullo-esque is what it is. I like the mechanism. I mean, he's like part Venom, part Xenomorph.
Yes.
I don't know if we'd met him before or if he's a new character.
I don't think we have, but I'm not an expert.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's new. He's got those dumb little wings. I don't know. Sometimes new villain that comes out from out of nowhere, you know, and is sort of the all-powerful. It's like Doomsday. Or it's like whatever.
Yeah.
I find that less compelling.
Mm-hmm.
The overall idea that the Kree are coming for the Inhumans and the chickens have come home to roost, I like.
I thought this was fun.
Yeah, I did too.
I think I didn't realize it until you just said it, but because they were off on their own, as the Best in Human stories have been, other than when they were introduced.
It's like that Black Bolt story that, you know, was in his soul book. Same thing.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
I'm moving forward with it, which is, I guess, a miniseries that they're not saying is a miniseries because nothing is a miniseries.
Nothing makes sense, nothing matters, and nothing is a miniseries.
You know what I find is that even if I'm not going anywhere, if I'm just staying in my house all day, if I don't shave with Harry's, I feel like I'm not comfortable.
I didn't know what you were going to say. I thought you were going to, you don't feel like a man. And I was like, that's a lot of pressure to put on a
razor blade. I just feel like I shower and I shave. And even if I'm not going anywhere, I still feel better about myself. I don't feel unclean. That could be my own weird hang up, but I'm just saying the smooth shave I get with Harry's razors, it makes my day better, even if I'm just sitting on the couch watching TV.
If I could offer a counterpoint.
Yeah, sure.
It's not a disagreement. It's just an alternate point of view. I don't need to shave all the time. It's not necessary for me. I got to do it maybe a couple of times a week just to sort of clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that historically is that if I do let it go too long and then when I go back in, I get an irritation.
Mm.
And so that used to be the problem where I would shave frequently just to avoid the irritation. But I actually don't have to do that now. And I believe we've talked about this before. I don't get a lot of irritation with the Harry's, so I can space it out a little more.
Right.
So, you know, it works for everybody, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
For all kinds of reasons. And the reason why I think why you don't get the irritation, why I feel better after shaving is because Harry stands behind the quality of their blades. And they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So they created a trial offer. You can claim yours by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. The Harry's founders were fed up with overpriced razors, unnecessary features, making those razors more expensive. And they know a great shave comes down to great blades made of sharp and durable steel that lasts. That's why they bought the factory that makes some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. It's a German factory, obviously. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand. Just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. And a quality guarantee you gotta love. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they'll give you a full refund, which is insane. We've already told them we love it, so we can't take advantage of that.
We can't.
Also, it's been more than 30 days. All so here's the trial offer Harry's is offering to you, iFanboy listeners. You get a $13 trial set. Everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, a weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, all in $13 value trial set. Listeners of iFanboy can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/iFanboy. Make sure you go to harrys.com/iFanboy to redeem your offer and let them know we sent you and help support the show. Thank you very much.
The last siege, number two. Talked about it briefly before. I don't think it was patron pick. I think we just read it.
Yes. Maybe.
Speaking of Robert the Bruce, I just kind of wanted to check in because I saw it and I was like, well, was I reading this before? Oh, right, it's this book. and I dug it.
Yeah.
It was sort of there's a Robin Hood kind of thing going on where basically everybody went away. The bad guy sort of took over everything. And now this one sort of outpost slash house is going to try to stand against them. And they have one chance and they want to try to rally the other people. But the hordes are coming and the timing has to be perfect. And everybody on the protagonist side is really dubious about whether they can succeed or not. It's all or nothing. Again, there was a moment where I thought, is this going to be supernatural? Because there's a sort of reveal, and it isn't. It's science, and I'm fine with that. They have a lot of gunpowder, basically.
Yeah, no, I thought this was fun. I had the same reaction you did. I was like, did I read that? And I did, and it was enjoyable.
Yeah, it was good. So continue reading it if you were curious, if you should.
Green Lantern's 50, I wanted to mention, because this is the first issue with a new creative team. Dan Jurgens and Mike Perkins.
Dan Jurgens. Mike Perkins.
Mike Perkins. Is Mike Perkins done DC work before? I don't know.
I'm going to assume he has.
So the funny thing about this book is that, so there's been two Green Lanterns books. There's been Green Lanterns, there's been Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps features Hal and Kyle and John and Guy as the main protagonists. Whereas Green Lanterns has been about Simon and Jessica. In this issue, we get John and we get Guy and Kilowog. And it wasn't until page 13 that Jessica showed up and I'd forgotten. I was like, oh, right, this is the Green Lanterns book. So I don't know what they're doing. And there's Kyle and there's everybody's in this book. It was good. I don't know if Jurgens' magic translates beyond Superman.
I can see that.
It certainly wasn't his New 52 Green Arrow, for sure. It was good. This was good. It didn't feel as comfortable as when he writes Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't bad. it's interesting. There's been a lot of shit is going on, and Mo goes under attack, and the idea of Mogo having like a weather storm that fucks everything up was new and interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting.
A storm of green energy. Like green energy.
You don't want that.
No.
Unless you do.
The Mike Perkins art was definitely a departure. Very gritty.
Mm-hmm.
Not consistent, I don't think, but definitely a different take on Green Lantern. So I am very curious to read more to see where this is going, because I'm not sure yet what I think about it. I think it's interesting for sure.
That's going to have to be, I mean, that's almost the most you can ask for sometimes.
Yeah.
I wanted to check in on Immortal Hulk number 2. I wasn't sure I was going to keep reading this,
but
my curiosity got me.
Yeah.
This issue sort of cemented a little more where we are in the world, that this is Bruce Banner. This is in the aftermath of Hawkeye shooting him as he had requested to kill him, and I think a reasonable explanation of what happened there and why. Mm-hmm. Basically, Banner wanted to know if he could be killed, and he could, but the Hulk can't.
How do you feel about him now having some sort of danger sense in the wound hole?
I know what you're saying, and I think when it first popped up in the issue, I thought, that's dumb. But as they sort of refined it a little bit, it was basically the Hulk who has a precedent of having different incarnations, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Hulk is in there listening and he's observing like a big green Sherlock Holmes about things, and he's putting two and two together, he's like, this is the thing I want to deal with.
Right.
And so that's the way that I chose to interpret it, which isn't really necessarily an ESP kind of thing, but like the Hulk being insistent because of whatever he's seeing.
Not like elongated man's nose.
Yeah.
But in Bruce's forehead.
Well, I mean, that is what it is at the end of the day, effectively.
This is basically, I mean, it's been so long since I read the Peter David Hulk stuff, and I didn't read it all, but this is sort of like the Mr. Fixity Hulk. And he's not gray, but like, he's chatty.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I mean,
you like Big Dumb Hulk.
I like Big Dumb Hulk, and I don't know, the idea of Hulk sort of watching through his forehead being like, there's crime, we must stop, is weird to me for the Hulk. But I read it, and I didn't hate it, so I guess I'll keep reading it.
I always put it like that in my head. This isn't forever. This is just what the Hulk is right now.
Sure.
So, it's, you get the Hulk you get, and he's in no control over
the
it.
The Hulk we deserve.
Yeah, again. But I find it interesting enough. I like the puzzle of it to sort of see what it's going to be.
Right now, I liked this particular story, the gamma radiation. I liked the daisy chain gamma radiation problem.
Yeah.
It was interesting. So when I finished, I was like, oh, okay. It's not my Hulk, but I liked it.
Yeah, definitely. When I interviewed Scotty Young a couple of months ago, we talked about the end of I Hate Fairyland, where he said, oh, yeah, it's totally ending. I just haven't told anyone. And that's why this was the last issue. We did basically a 3-issue last arc, and this was the end of it. And I liked it. I think I liked the ending. I think that he made the right choice not to sort of make it go on forever. I liked what he did with her in the end. She got the Vic Mackey treatment.
She got desk job?
Basically, yeah. Like, she got out of Fairyland and she's stuck at a shitty desk job, and she's just, you know, 20 or 30 something office worker with green hair, who kind of, you know, regrets it and kind of wants to go back. And
I've always found fascinating, like, when you watch those kind of movies, and I've almost never dealt with this. What is the aftermath of having that life-changing adventure when you have to go back to your humdrum life? The only time I can recall being dealt with is sort of in one of the many endings of Lord of the Rings, in which, they're all back at the pub, and it just seems so boring to them. But, like, you know.
Well, I mean, that's Bilbo's deal.
Right.
That's Bilbo's whole thing, is that he's like, I got to go. I got to go over the sea because I can't be here anymore.
You know, when you have this crazy adventure, then you have to go back. You have to go back to paying your bills, you know, and picking up the dry cleaning.
That's Mark Miller's Starlight.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I always find that so interesting. And
it's what The Incredibles is about.
So it's interesting to see that here a little bit.
Well,
anyway,
he could. Yeah. And you know, he could come back and do more stories with these people anytime. But, you know, this 20 issues, I think, was good. I think Scotty Young drawing and writing a whole book on a regular basis is going to get more rare.
Yes.
He's writing 3 ongoings right now.
Yes. I mean, just why why draw? Spend all your time drawing when you could write tons of books. And I get it.
So, you know, good for him. Like, we've known Scotty for a really long time. He's talked about a lot of things and starting, you know, come up with new projects. And he did this one. Like, he did 20 issues of it. He turned it into a thing. He did it and he finished it. And I think that that's laudable. And it was enjoyable. And people dug it. And so congrats on that. And it was fun to read.
So we're going back in the corner.
Oh, that's right. Star Wars corner. Number 50 Star Wars is up here. And I could mention this solely because of the amazing Travis Charest cover.
Mm.
It's a gorgeous Travis Charest cover. And then inside is Salvador La Roca. So there's that. But you know what? Honestly, like, I'm so used to looking at his art and these characters now that it almost doesn't bother me anymore.
They beat it out of you. They beat the resistance out of you.
If I back up and I look at it, you know, from an objective point of view, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But as I'm reading it, I'm just used to it. It is what it is. And I really liked this story. Basically, it's such a big story that I don't want to go through the whole thing, but the Alliance thought they had this really great friend who helped them out with something, and she betrays them to the Empire at the last minute. You know, we keep seeing this, you know, this thing happen over and over, Lando and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And there's this really neat moment where, you know, all the Star Destroyers come out of space and they see the fleet, and he's like, should we open fire? And Vader's just like, no, they don't quite realize it yet. And he waits a little bit for them to realize how fucked they are. Then he goes after them. I was like, that's badass. So it was fun. It was a really good, like, it felt like Star Wars. And, like, that Travis Charest cover's amazing.
Was it super long? What about it made a 50th issue? Oh, that is a great cover. Wow.
Yeah, no, it's stunning. I don't know. It's 29 pages of content, so it might be a little bit longer. Hey, look, there's this completely second story in here.
That you didn't read?
Nope. Written by...
You have to go all the way to the end, Josh.
I thought I did. It said the end. I didn't... And it was, you know, longer than a normal issue, so I didn't realize there was more. It's a digital book, so I didn't... It says to be continued. That usually signals the end. Flipped. There's cover gallery. 4 pages of cover galleries before you get to the next credits page.
Right,
I had no way to know that.
You don't scroll all the way till it says you're done with the file?
I don't need to, usually.
I always do, because then it... Takes away from the in-progress bar.
You do a lot of systematic things that I
do. No, I do it because it takes it off the in-progress bar on the main page of Comixology.
I just delete all the books as soon as we're done with the show, so I don't notice it. I bet we use Comixology completely differently.
Yes. All right. Well, I'm glad that the cover was awesome.
It was good. It was a fun issue to read, though. The storyline's been...
Let us leave Star Wars Corner and go to the Patron Pick Corner every week at patreon.com/iFanboy. All the patrons, every one of them can vote to add a book to the rundown of the show. This week, Cosmic Ghost Rider, number 1. From Donnie Cates and Dylan Burnett, Antonio Fabella, Clayton Callis. And this was not a book I was ever going to read.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you're a little under the spell of the Cates, and I think you don't want to admit it yet.
No, I love Donnie Cates. I just was never going to read Cosmic Ghost Rider. Come on.
Did you know what it was?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know it was a Punisher book.
This is a spinoff of the character that was in Thanos.
Yes. Oh, well, yes. Obviously. This is the Thanos version. This is the Cosmic Ghost Rider who we
yeah. get.
I like the thing, my favorite, I mean, I like this issue, but my favorite part of the book was the opening 4 pages?
3.
3 pages that basically tells his story in 4 panel pages.
Yeah. That was great.
That was really
I don't know who Dylan Burnett is.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Burnett is great.
My favorite part of the book was the art. It was incredible.
Yeah. That bit of storytelling, that 3-page recap of sort of everything that's happened, which, by the way, clear as day without a word other than just sort of tell you where the thing is.
Yeah.
Great comic booking.
Mm-hmm.
But each panel on its own is great to look at.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Beautiful. Vietnam, dead family, war on terror. He dies. You know, like Thanos is in the background of the death. He goes to hell. Mephisto is sitting there. Then you see him as the spirit of vengeance. And you see him, you know, you see everything. And it's just great. It's beautiful. And then you get, you know, Frank Castle in hell, which is the exact same story as Frank Castle in prison. Just kicks everybody's ass, doesn't give a shit, pisses off Odin.
Well, he's not in hell. He's in Valhalla.
I know. I'm sorry. Right. He's in Valhalla. Odin thinks he's trying to – he's doing something nice. And then he pushes Odin past that point. Basically, you know, would you kill Hitler if you could time travel? Well, he tries it. Decides he can't do it, and then baby Thanos beats the shit out of him.
Well, also goes back to, he goes back to kill Thanos as a kid, and I give him credit.
Yeah.
He punches that kid.
After he gets punched.
Sure, but I was a little surprised that the kid jumps on him and starts wailing on him, but it's not a big deal as a little kid, but he full on cracks that kid in the mouth, and I was a little surprised that they allow that to happen, even if it is baby Thanos, and now he has a little baby Thanos sidekick. I mean, this is totally in Donny Cates' wheelhouse, where it rides the line between silly and serious.
Yeah, that last panel page totally got me. I was like, just chain baby Thanos to you. All right, let's go with this. Because there's a lot of things here that I don't like.
Like what?
Thematically. I don't really like Punisher stories. I don't really like Ghost Rider stories. But the combination of all this stuff, along with the artwork, along with the attitude of it, I could read this. I don't read this for 3 years.
Yeah.
But I don't know how long it's going to be or whatever it is, but I'm in for a while. This was super fun, and it was really well done.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I don't. I liked it. It just, as a concept, I don't really care about it.
Yeah. I honestly, it would be enough to watch the Krafton show. I loved what this book looked like.
Yeah, no, Dylan Burnett would be one of the big reasons why I would keep reading it. So I'm going to make that a game time decision. I guess that's spoiling. Ratings.
Ratings.
Out of 5, I'm going to give it a 4.
I will also give it a 4.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
Game time decision. Mm-hmm. But there's a chance I will.
There's some real Kirby going on in this art. There's a lot of that Kirby line design stuff.
It's terrific.
That New Gods stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's Kirby dots. There's a ton of motion. I really like the colors are fantastic.
Hmm.
It's Antonio Fabella on colors. Yeah, you know what? The colors actually really have a lot to do with the art.
Yeah, the team together is working really well.
Yeah, I'm sure they've done something that I don't either know about or I forgot about.
All right, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can go and vote to put a book into the rundown. Anybody as a patron can vote, but if you're a patron at a $5 or higher level, you get your own dumb superpower on the show live, especially live because I didn't prepare. Just Josh, you kick it off.
Andre Morton has the power of attenuation. He can take the volume of anything down by 60% just by tapping it. He can't turn it off. He can't make it silence, but he can take it down by 60%. I have a button like this in my car.
We have a lot of powers that involve people being quiet or the world being more quiet.
All the world. I just like the word attenuate whole lot. I'm a big fan of that. And also, in my aftermarket car stereo that I installed myself, thank you, there's the big round button in the middle. If you just tap it, it just drops the music by 60% so that you can hear what the kid's saying, which ironically a lot of times is, can you turn the music up? My younger son has a very small voice, and he always wants me to turn the music up. So I hear him in the background just, what? Turn it up. Oh, okay. But I like that button,
yeah.
And I think it would be nice. But he has to tap it, so you got to touch it. So, if he was at a concert and he's like, this is too loud, he's got to make his way up to the PA.
You got to tap all the amps?
No, I think if he just goes, well, you could tap the house system, but then the amps would still be loud. The house system would go down.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's a little harder for that. He got tackled by security that one time.
James Feehely. Is that right? Feehely?
Feely.
James.
I bet it gets sort of shrunk together. I bet it's just Feely.
Feely.
I say it with an accent.
James can extend his arms and legs. He can make them twice as long.
Both of them?
Yes. His arms and his legs, he can double their size.
Do the hands and feet change size?
No.
Okay. Do both parts, so like bicep and forearm.
This is the whole arm stretches.
Okay.
Like a Play-Doh.
Does it gain proportional strength, or is it the same amount of strength but with twice as much mass?
It's got to be able to hold him up still, so it's I guess he gets stronger.
Or is he always really strong, so he's stronger proportionally when he's in smaller mode?
Could be. But he can't make it smaller. He can only make it longer.
Uh-huh.
Mecha leg.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's hard on his pants, though. The pants don't stretch.
Okay, but that in a yoga pant world, not a big deal.
Sure.
Yeah. Brandon Yonker can travel at the speed of light.
What? Whoa.
Yeah. The problem is.
Uh huh.
There's no useful application for that at all that does not completely fuck his shit up.
What do you mean?
I mean, basically, you take the tiniest blip forward. Where's he going to be? It's almost like Black Bolt.
Right. It's too powerful. It's too powerful.
It is too powerful. So, you know, if I'm Brandon, I'm spending my whole life trying to figure out, you know, how to use this in some way that would be useful. And then, but also, like, you don't want to sleepwalk.
Well, yeah, I mean,
yeah, no, it's a problem. Like, if he is just, like, if he ever tries to show off for a second, or, you know, at the least, he's displaced in time. But maybe, like, maybe he could learn to use it in, like, a tiny, tiny micro amount. But even then, 186,000 miles per second. Say that he goes, I mean, if he could move in a tenth of a second, he could go 18,000 miles. That's a problem.
I mean, yeah, the Earth is 25,000 miles around.
All right, so he'd have to cut that down to the hundredth of a second, to 1,800 miles.
It's a lot of math for him.
I know there's some sort of benefit, but it's I mean, with great power,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Zach Pindolia, I'm sorry. Zach has an the top of Zach's mouth is indestructible, meaning wow. He never burns his mouth on hot food.
I was gonna say the pizza in college is a whole other thing.
Pizza right out of the oven, shove it right in there, Zach. No burns.
If you may remember, or maybe you don't. But what would happen is, in college, the pizza would arrive, and there would be the mad dash to make sure you got at least, you know, the requisite two or three pieces.
Sure.
And you're holding them, so you got to try to eat them, because you can't
as
hold all
as fast as possible.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, Zach never burns the top of his mouth, no matter what. French bread pizza, right out of the oven?
Oh my God, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
He never gets that little hangy bit?
No. he never ruins the rest of his meals for the next 3 days. He's chewing on the side of his mouth very gingerly. Uh-huh. Nothing.
I got to tell you, if I had to choose that over the inability to damage my cheeks by hanging down on them, I might go for the cheeks.
Sure. That one happens more often.
Because I did that a couple days ago. And then, ironically, then your cheek is swollen. So you do it three more times.
You keep doing it. Yeah. It's
more than the last one.
For sure. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can join up. To get your dumb superpower at a $5 higher level, or to vote on a patron pick book every week. Thanks for all who join up and help us out. Help support the show.
I don't think my power was dumb enough this week.
That's okay.
We can't always be dumb, people.
Maybe.
Well, yeah. You know, I've made a career of it.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. As we said, that's where you can go help support the show. Our next stretch goal is a monthly non-comics media podcast. If you want to hear us listen to that, we're about $300 away from if you ever thought about joining up. Now's your chance. Our t-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. That's where you find our seven designs, the iFanboy logo, the Herm shirt, Pick of the Week podcast ratings. If one is Electro, GDAT, then nothing makes sense, nothing matters, which I hope to see at least one of these shirts at Comic-Con this year. ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly. A lot of people do that. You don't want to become members, and we thank you very much to those who do. ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to buy the books we talk about on Booksplode shows there. And you can also find a general Amazon link. I think everyone who uses all those methods to help support iFanboy and keep it going, we really do appreciate it. Hey, Josh.
Yes?
We got a voicemail.
We have a voicemail?
That's right.
I don't even know how to do that anymore.
Hey, Josh and Connor. This is Matt from Long Island. I want to ask you guys a question about licensed books. Obviously, there's Star Wars Corner, and I know you guys are a big fan of some of the G.I. Joe books in the past. But what does it take for you to read a licensed book? What draws you to it? Is it creators? Is it a fresh take on the material? Just curious. Thanks. Bye.
Difficult to answer, I found. At first I thought it was going to be easy to answer. Then I thought about it, and I don't know how exactly to answer, which is good.
I think there's definitely some factors that apply sometimes and not others, so it's sort of a shifting sands kind of thing. I think the first answer is an interesting creator on a thing will make us go more towards it. I probably wouldn't have read a Planet of the Apes book,
mm-hmm.
but Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becko on the Planet of the Apes book was definitely
But also you knew that they were big fans of it, so that made it more interesting.
Right, but that's but that also just because I'm familiar with them and their work, so that, you know, that makes me – they're not just taking a gig. You know, like I know I know a guy who wrote Vampirella for a while. Now, he can say in every interview he wants, I'm a huge fan of Vampirella, but that's a paycheck.
Sure. Warren Ellis did James Bond, and yeah, I read one. I think I read one or two issues, and it didn't really do anything for me.
Right.
I mean, first of all, I think for me, at a base level, I'd have to have some interest in the property.
Usually, yeah, because
I mean,
if you don't, you won't have any familiarity with it to see what's going on. You know, like you won't know what the point is.
And that's not necessarily always true. I think we found with these Hanna-Barbera books, you know, although obviously I have interest in Flintstones, but like I read Snagglepuss because Mark Russell wrote it, not because of my affinity for Snagglepuss.
Yeah, but that still feels like an outlier because it was really good. If it wasn't, then you'd be like, eh. But even if you take, you know, Garth Ennis has done a bunch of these kind of things, and they're not always good. Really, the default for most licensed comics is that's not going to be good. And I remember the exact moment that I was way too late to realize this, but I remember the exact moment that I realized that was – at some point, I say IDW did the Shield comic.
Yes, yes.
And this was before IDW was like a fully, we're just doing licensed comics.
Right.
And I was really into the Shield, and I was like, buy that comic. And I was like, oh, this is awful.
Yeah, I think we both did that. Around the same time, there was a 24 comic, and I was big into 24. Yeah. And
right. So there was definitely a time when if I liked a property, I'd go, oh, check out that comic. Yeah. But that had really bad diminishing returns, and I sort of learned, oh, that's not the way to go. So there has to be another element to it.
It's somehow a weird now, amalgam of creator and property and my relationship to the property.
Yep. Do you remember when Howard Chaykin did the Die Hard books?
Yes, yes, the Die Hard Year One.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, because it was mostly just a Chaykin cop book. It just happened to feature a beat cop named John McClane. That's a combination of creator, property, and the pitch. It wasn't just a retread of Die Hard. It was a different take on that, which I like.
Oh, and an adaptation is not the same thing as a licensed book. There's almost no reason to read that.
Yeah, and I tend to not read anything that is a licensed book from like a TV show or a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's something like Planet of the Apes, which is not really the same. But, you know, like a Lost comic or something like that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there have been good examples of that, and I'm having a hard time.
Well, the outlier has been the Buffy books that...
Yeah, those were good.
...were really good for the first couple years, and I just sort of got tired of them. The same thing happened with the show, so I'm not surprised. It's a hard... there's no easy answer. It's a case-by-case basis on them. And I don't always... I don't write off a licensed comic book just for being a licensed comic book, but it's a much harder sell.
Yeah, because it's a much harder job, I think. You know, sort of have the option to like, well, do I give the people what they want? Do I put my voice in it? Do I just do like a bog standard? So there's all sorts of ways to go about that. Mm-hmm. And, I think that, media is flexible. Comic books can do a lot of things that other things can't do. But sometimes part of the attraction of the thing is in the form. And it doesn't necessarily make sense to make something into a comic book other than they got the license.
Yeah,
and you can smell that a million miles away. Oh, they got the license, so they're making a comic book of it.
But also, like, the skill and charm of the actor is lost on the page. If something's really good because the acting is really good, then...
Mm-hmm.
Or it's good because the writing and acting is really good. It's going to lose something because you don't get the acting anymore.
Yeah. Or, just because, like... It was an example of a show that has a visual, but, like, Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad has a very specific visual style that depends on looking at it in sort of a cinematic or, moving format, basically.
Yeah.
And so, like, adapting that into a comic wouldn't make sense necessarily.
Right.
But there's been things, that were, they've done tales of, or, like side versions of it where it hasn't necessarily been awful, but I can't think of any, so it's probably not that memorable.
Well, technically speaking, I mean, Star Wars is a licensed book in a way.
Sure.
So
no, absolutely is.
It just depends. It depends on a lot of factors.
Yeah, but I think both of us have learned by experience to approach licensed comics with wariness.
Sure. We've been burned.
And I can't tell you why, really, at the end of the day, why I'm okay with reading Star Wars comics and Marvel way more than I ever was with the Dark Horse ones. Now, I read older Dark Horse comics, and they were fun. We did Heir to the Empire, The Dark. You guys bought me that book once. We did a Booksplode on it.
Oh, Dark Empire.
Dark Empire.
Yeah.
That was a really good comic, you know, but it had its thing. Then there were a lot of comics, you know, that Dark Horse did that, you know, it wasn't the A-team on them, basically. And when they went to Marvel put their A-team on it. Not necessarily art-wise. But
Stuart Eminem for a while.
Yeah, no, exactly. But the guys writing them, you know, Jason Aaron and Kieran Gillen, you know, they leaned into it and they, you know, they had all their skills. And I thought that worked really well. I thought, you know, the Star Wars that Gabe and Karina did were really good, although I would have read that no matter what.
Right. Stephen B. from Maryland writes and says, I've been thinking about this question since 2014. What is Brian Lee O'Malley's obsession with bread making you fat? And he included two pieces of evidence. One was a scene from Scott Pilgrim versus the World Volume 2, in which Ramona reveals to Scott that bread makes you fat, which is also in the film. And he also included a scene from Seconds, which was O'Malley's book from 2014, in which, I forgot the characters' names, but same situation where they're talking about bread and there's a realization, almost the same dialogue about bread making you fat.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the obsession?
I mean, I don't know, other than he probably really likes bread and is aware of the fact that it's a lot of carbohydrates.
Yes.
However, should be noted, the bread actually doesn't make you any fatter than anything else of equal caloric value.
Right. I think before we became hyper aware of the food we're eating now, as opposed to like 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, bread seemed very simple. It's just bread.
Yeah. O'Malley is our age more or less. So we came up in a different time where bread was an innocuous thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't the unhealthy thing. Bread was the thing that you, like, oh, they bring you bread along with it. Oh, great, we get to eat bread. And what you didn't know is that you were consuming the same amount of calories in bread as the meal that you had also ordered. And now America's fat.
Yeah.
But the thing remains is the bread is fucking delicious.
That's the thing. And I think that's everyone's problem, is that it is mm-hmm. delicious when it's made properly.
If you have a ciabatta and you slice it and put a little oil on it and put it on the grill, it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah. And the thing is, here in Los Angeles, when people don't eat bread, I say, fuck you, I'm eating the bread.
And if there's a lot of bread at the table, they bring you the bread,
mm-hmm.
and you just say, I'm going to have some of the bread, you can't do that.
No.
Because it's so good. I understand why Brian Lee O'Malley can't get over this. I can't get over this.
It's terrible.
I lost a lot of weight over the last year and change, and part of it was I stopped eating like side bread, like when I would make pasta, I didn't make bread anymore, and I miss it more than anything other than orange juice, which I really miss.
It's terrible. Life is terrible. It's a series of terrible realizations.
Well, what's funny is that, like, when Subway first came out, and I remember this, like when Subway was a thing, the Subway was the healthy alternative. That was the idea.
Right.
But it's 500 calories of bread and some lettuce.
Right.
Like, it's not a good meal. But at the time, it was. And they've stuck with that, too. It's Subway, eat fresh, do your healthy thing. Like, so people are still like, oh, I'm a good Subway because it's a better alternative. Like, it's bread. I don't know. I got to call Brian Lee O'Malley and talk about it because I think I understand where he's coming from.
Contact@iFanboy.com. That's where you can write an email or you can send us a voice clip like Matt did to get on the show. Thanks to everyone who does that every day.
That was pretty far afield. I'm starting to see that we're starting to get a food corner thing going here.
Now I want a piece of steak in between bread.
What happened on the podcast that made you upset? Well, I really like the way that those guys talk about comics, but they did this thing where for 5 minutes they told me about bread, and I fucking know about bread. Shut up. It's not why I came here.
Didn't come here for your steak and your bread talk.
Oh, no one would be upset with the steak talk. I had a steak that night.
I had it the next day. It was awesome.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Let's plug some shows.
Yeah. If you haven't, go over and listen to the TalkSplit interview I did with Terry Moore of Strangers in Paradise and Echo and Rachel Rising and Motor Girl. I always get feedback. I always get feedback. One of my favorite parts of doing the shows is not having the conversation, which I am always happy with after the fact, but the bit afterwards over the course of the next week, when people are like, oh, I really enjoyed that. And there's like this sincerity in it that I feel like I'm lucky to get to have these conversations and then bring them to people, because people seem to really appreciate it. You know, not a billion people, but enough of a handful of people that I feel like I'm glad that I did that thing, not just for me, but for others too. And I think Terry Moore was another one of those. I just really dug that conversation. I was really glad that other people did too. He's such a good guy. Like, it just radiates from the sound of his voice and what he says. And so I really dug that. So that means next month we are up for a Booksplode in this alternate
this month.
Yeah, I guess that is this month.
We're in July.
It's early this month. And we're here to – we can tell you what it's going to be so you can prepare for it. We will record it and release it before the end of the month, but we're going to be reading Planetary Book 1. These are a newer collection of the Planetary Warren Ellis, John Cassaday books. This one basically encompasses issues 1 through 14 and a handful of specials that are in there.
Planetary Book 1 probably towards the end of the month.
Yeah. So you got a little time if you want to read it. If you haven't looked at it in a while, that's the thing.
And a little sooner than that is the Ant-Man and the Wasp podcast, which should be before this show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Should be.
Possibly. Probably.
It's around this show.
It's around this show. It could be before. It could be after. We'll see. But it'll be around. It'll be in the vicinity of the show.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's close enough.
Mm-hmm.
Also in the vicinity of the show is iFanboy.com. Which the show is in the vicinity of iFanboy.com as well, where you can go to find this podcast, all of our previous podcasts, that Terry Moore podcast, and the other 68 Talksplodes that precede it, of which a lot of them are Rick Remender. I'm going to be honest with you.
Good
so you
portion.
can watch that whole thing happen. It's actually 7.5%. I did the math. 7.5% of Talksplodes are Rick Remender.
He's good radio.
He is. That's absolutely true. It's just two guys just talking. Nobody has to know about it. You can find out what the pick of the week is before this show comes out that you're listening to now. So you can be prepared by listening or liking us at facebook.com/iFanboy or following at iFanboy on Twitter. And of course, if you're a patron, you will get updated on that kind of thing too. You can follow us individually. I'm J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram. And Connor is C.S. Kilpatrick over on Instagram.
And if you like the show, leave a review on iTunes or just leave a star rating. That's for any podcast you listen to. It really helps shows. And if you can't support them other ways, you can help support by leaving a little rating or review. It helps people find the show and everyone appreciates it. Even better than that is you can tell your friends about podcasts. People who you think might like the show or the content or the subject matter. If it's your mom, sure. If it's a person who delivers your packages, fine. If it's the guy who takes the ticket at the movie theater, also great. Anyone you think might want to listen, let them know. Help support the show. Spread the love all around.
Can you sign here, please? Do you like comics? Not really. You should listen to the show. Just sign here, please.
I want to go home. So that's it for this week's show. Good job, Josh.
I thought you did a good job as well, Connor. Thank you for that. Hats off to all of us.
2 weeks of Comic-Con.
Sure. Whatever.
And until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Just want the emails to slow down. Touch me.